Hello, this is the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast coming to you the morning after a 35-0 win over Russia. And we're going to start with the captain, or is he, Rory Best. Here he is.
Yeah, look, I think ultimately when you get to these sort of pool competitions with knockout stages coming after them, you want to get into the last round with your destiny in your own hands. We're there. Look, obviously I think we would have expected to be in a better place after three games. You know, we would have expected to win the three games, but look, that hasn't happened. And now it was important to get 5 points last night, and it's important now that we take a couple of days just to regenerate, to refresh everyone a little bit after what has been a fairly hectic schedule with a 6 and a 5 day turnaround. And we get into the Samoa game on Monday, and we look at that week and we make sure that we keep improving. We said that after the Scotland game and we didn't do it against Japan, so it's important now that we keep taking steps forward. But look, ultimately where you want to be is knowing that a win and a bonus point win will guarantee you a quarterfinal place, and that's why we're here to play in the quarterfinals, and that is I suppose we probably made no secret of that, and that's where we're at.
Okay, Michael Corcoran's in Japan. I'm not sure if he's in Roppongi or where you are. Michael, good morning.
Hi, Dari. I'm in Fukuoka. We moved today, so we're at the next venue for the Samoa game next week. A week or a couple of days off for everybody. And back into it again on Monday. That's the reality for Ireland.
Yeah, and just for you personally, what do you do? Are you on a couple of days off yourself?
Well, there are kind of provisional plans maybe to do some kind of touristy thing perhaps over the weekend. A few of us investigating the possibility to go to Hiroshima. I mean, it's an absolutely fantastic country. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to get the chance to come out this way again. But I've been to Osaka during the course of last week. I went to Kyoto the week before. I'm a pretty decent tourist, so I like to see the country and take a break from the rugby as well. So hopefully I'll be able to do that over the next couple of days.
Yeah, taking a break from the rugby is becoming a little more difficult. I suppose we'll have our green specs on for the first part of the programme, Michael. And, it was kind of irritating, the performance yesterday. It was hard to react positively to a 35-0 win.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think, you know, everybody would probably agree that we've yet to see the best of Ireland in terms of a consistently good performance or a consistent performance at this Rugby World Cup. I mean, they were really good in patches against Scotland. I didn't think that they were great against Japan, and we saw that was reflected in the final score. I mean, when they needed to be good against Russia up in Kobe, they were. But it was a pretty poor second half. They started the second half pretty poorly. I think the fact that Johnny Sexton went off at halftime, they lost quite a lot of their direction and their drive there. So, you know, we've yet to see the best of Ireland at this competition. Time is running out, unfortunately. I mean, they've got to do something in terms of having a much better, more consistent performance against Samoa this coming weekend, and hopefully that they'll be involved in knockout. I mean, it's knockout rugby effectively from now on for Ireland.
Yeah, it is exciting, I suppose. But like the Sexton point, we all know that he's important in the top tests against the tier ones, against the big guns. But now to be so important against the minnows, what's going on?
Well, you know, I mean, we're in a situation where at the moment, because of the position regarding Joey Carberry, we're operating with two number 10s. So it's got to be Johnny Sexton or Jack Carthy at the moment. That's the reality. And Joey Carberry is, I won't say struggling, but certainly isn't 100% fit in terms of his fitness. So neither is Johnny Sexton for that matter. So it puts a bit of pressure and added pressure on players to perform when they come in. And we're seeing that. And we're playing rugby almost like in a straitjacket, I think, at the moment. I don't think that they've expressed themselves on the pitch. Yes, they've scored tries, but they're making really hard work of putting away, as you call them, a tier two team. And other sides like Wales, like Australia, like New Zealand, like South Africa, like England would have put on a really, really bigger score on a team like Russia. I mean, I was personally expecting somewhere, you know, the region of 50 to 60 points to be scored against them. And I mean, we left ourselves well shy of that.
Good morning, Stephen Ferris.
Good morning.
Where did you watch the game yesterday?
I watched the game sitting on my big sofa in the house, and to be honest, I couldn't believe what I was watching in some parts of the game. And I actually recorded the match and watched it again last night and went through it. And I found myself hitting the fast forward button an awful lot, and that was due to the amount of errors, the amount of mistakes, the amount of scrums, the amount of reset scrums, the amount of lineouts. I'd love to hear the stat for actually the ball being in play during that game, because it wasn't high whatsoever, just a game that was littered with errors. And, you know, watching and listening to the commentary, and it almost felt like Russia played some of the better rugby during the match. And Ireland's tries came from a few line breaks, which they were able to finish off, a little bit of class shown by Johnny Sexton in the first half. But apart from that, they didn't really fire too many other shots. And, you know, Russia just kept putting the ball up in the air, waited for an Irish mistake, and then, you know, couldn't really capitalise on that. And, oh, as an Irish fan yesterday and watching the game twice now, it's left me feeling very, very frustrated today, and wondering, are Ireland good enough to get beyond the quarterfinal? I still believe they've got a big game in them, Dara, but as Michael said there, they're running out of time to come good.
Yeah, what do you think, Wes, about a big game in them?
Yeah, they might have won, I suppose. They've 2 weeks and one game against Samoa to get back to that, to their best, or it will be curtains in a quarter final. Yeah, I'd go along with Steve and just thought it was unbelievably frustrating. A lot of signs that are kind of worrying off the pitch as well, when you kind of hear people talk as if they're almost completely detached from what we've just seen with our own eyes in terms of the kind of merits of the performance and where they're actually placed.
You mean players and management?
Yeah.
But that's messaging, isn't it?
I suppose it is, and I suppose you're in a bubble, you know, in your own camp, and you have to be task focused and all the rest of it. But I think for a supporter, it absolutely adds to the frustration when it's not even really a putting your hands up.
I was just going to go into that.
Hi, Michael.
Hi guys. From the moment Johnny Sexton stood up after the match, and Peter O'Mahony and Reese Ruddock, and then Joe Smith, they were all trying to accentuate the positive, and these guys have standards, and they have higher standards than that. So that's why it was kind of hard to listen to, because behind closed doors, there's no way that these men are saying this is good enough.
Do you think you were at a Scientology conference or something?
I just wonder at this stage. We deserve a bit more honesty, because even in the press conference, Joe Smith was asked to talk about what he was pleased with and what concerned him. So he went on for a minute and 41 seconds of what pleased him, and then went on to the next question. Later on, he was asked if he could identify any pattern apart from the conditions. So aside from the conditions, this was kind of laboured in the question. Aside from the conditions, have you identified any patterns in the errors that you can address? Spoke for a minute, 30 seconds about the conditions, and promptly moved on to the next question. So it's as if they're playing some sort of, it's a mental trick to themselves to big themselves up. But you know, it's at odds with everything else.
I've heard about coaches in the past, like, in different codes, say, come in here to RTE because they've, like, disliked stuff that they've heard be said and things like that. And maybe I'm naive about it, but I kind of feel that the coach of Ireland should be above PR. So it's really frustrating to listen to stuff like
that. Well, to do the defence, I suppose, it's chicken and egg, isn't it? If everyone didn't go postal at poor performances, you might be more forthcoming. But if you're more forthcoming, then people can give you a bigger kicking. So, I mean, that argument was lost 18 months ago, really, insofar as the strategy is now don't tell the truth about how you really feel, because everybody will then say, Joe Schmidt admits crisis of confidence.
Yeah, look, no, Claire McNamara said to me yesterday, in fairness to her, when I met her, she said, I've never seen such dismay about a 35-point victory. So
which is fair
I
point.
Suppose you have to temper it a little bit, but, like, you know, there isn't much evidence that we're all of a sudden going to produce this amazing performance. We're kind of suspending disbelief back 18 months at this point.
But I think that's where the PR comes in. Because the 35-0 performance, where people come out and say, we were shocking, but we'll get better, everyone kind of goes, okay. But a 35-0 performance, which everyone knows would not get near winning a quarter final, and then we go into kind of some sort of brainwashing denial about it. I think that's what distances us from the team a little bit.
Well, it's obvious they're struggling with the conditions as well, or their own conditioning. I'm not sure which it is. Feds had known that a lot better, but they're incapable of going for 80 minutes. Every team seems to be. Obviously, the conditions are playing a part. I don't know how they've tapered their training or whatever like that. But, you know, I mean, if you're maybe looking at playing New Zealand now in a quarter final and you're struggling to go beyond 40, 50 minutes of sustained effort, you'd have to think any period of being lax or low in energy is going to be punished pretty remorselessly.
They put 17 on South Africa in 5 or 10 minutes.
3 minutes, I think, between the two tries.
Was it 3 minutes? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, conditioning. No idea. You're the athlete, Fez. Tell us what's your coach eye view on conditioning.
Yeah. Well, I think you can run all day and do as much strength conditioning work as you want in pre-season, but when it comes down to the nuts and crannies of it, it's about getting match minutes. And I think, you know, over the course of the last 4 or 5 games, key players are trying to get match minutes, but they're just not firing. And somebody like Johnny Sexton, he played 63 minutes in 4 World Cup warm-up games. He came off early against Scotland. He didn't play against Japan. He came off at halftime once again. Like, are some of our key men on this Rugby World Cup side, the squad of 31 that's out there, fit? I don't think they are. Why is Robbie Henshaw out there? We haven't seen a minute of him. We haven't seen anything to say that he is going to be fit and he is going to be coming back. Joey Carberry, he misses out yet again. I just think having a lot of negativity around people who aren't generally fit will actually breed into the squad, you know, and people will start doubting themselves. I think it's more of a mental thing than anything. There's a few concerning things for me over the weekend, like Tag Furlong, one of the best tight head props, arguably the best in the world, comes on and gets destroyed in the scrum. The scrum looked like it was all over the place, and Ian Henderson, one of the best tight head locks in the world, comes on. The scrum was going backwards. This is a Russia team. This is Russia. Like, this is not South Africa. This is not New Zealand. This is not an England front row with Vinopolos and, you know, these types of players. This is the level that they were at yesterday. And if they want to go further than a quarter final or even compete in a quarter final, then their standards have to be so much higher. They've got a 10-day rest now. They got to use this. Joe cannot be flogging the guys. He cannot be saying, right, guys, this is an opportunity to do more training. This is an opportunity to eliminate more mistakes. Sometimes less is more. Sometimes let the guys go out. Let them go and do their own thing for 3 or 4 days. Get their head away from rugby and come back refreshed. And you heard Rory Best in his interview that you played at the start there, Dara. You know, I think that's exactly what they need. They need to get away from rugby because at the minute they're just being bogged down and it's 100% reflecting in their performance. So these guys generally are fit. Mentally, I think they're a little bit fragile because of the level of their performances. But for me, the biggest problem is that key players aren't 100% fit.
Yeah, fair enough. Corky, give us a pep talk after all that.
Yeah, like, there's a couple of things there. I mean, just walking out of the stadium in Kobe last night in absolutely pouring rain, I take the points on board that the lads are saying in relation to sort of the negativity about the whole thing. But if you did a vox pop, if you had an umbrella to keep you dry, you're in a situation where I wouldn't think there was one person was complaining about the fact that Ireland didn't score 50 or 60 points against Russia. I mean, I got the train with Hugh Cal back into the centre of Kobe after the game, and you'd swear that Ireland had won the Rugby World Cup. Now, I mean, I was talking to George Gregan during the course of the week, and I mean, he made a pretty good point, which I think is a decent one. You know, we've effectively got 2 competitions. The first competition is to qualify for the knockout stages, and that's when the real Rugby World Cup starts. I would argue the point also that we haven't had a full-strength Irish team out in any of the matches far because of injury purposes, so I agree completely with what Stephen Ferris says there. My information, my understanding is that Robbie Henshaw will play this weekend, you know, and I think that will bring a solidity to the centre of the pitch there, probably alongside, well, I don't know, I mean, do you go with Gary Ringrose again or does Chris Farrell get another go? So there's a certain amount of kind of mixing and matching going on, slightly handicapped by the fact that not all the players are fully fit, and that's the situation there. I mean, obviously, Jordy Murphy getting injured last night wasn't ideal either, but,
Any news on Jordy Murphy?
No, I mean he went for a scan. We don't obviously have the results of the scan to hand, but I mean there's the more media over the course of the weekend, so I would suspect we'll have an update on Monday. But he travelled with the squad today, so they seem pretty confident that whatever the issue is, that they can deal with that in house, and not call in anybody as a replacement, basically. So look, I mean I can understand why people are frustrated. We're all expecting Ireland to, we all want Ireland to do really well in this competition. We haven't seen it so far. I do firmly believe that they're a much better side than what we've seen. In terms of what Wes said there, I mean, the first two games that were that took place in the stadium in Kobe, I mean, there were 35 handling errors in the first game. There were 30 in the second. At one stage on commentary with Rob Penny last night, with about 10 or 15 minutes ago, we mentioned the fact there were 24. So, I mean, the conditions are absolutely horrific, and I really mean that. We're not used to the humidity, and it is just, there are so many errors being made by teams consistently in the matches that they've played in, and it just makes it's a lottery. I mean, there's so many restarts, so many scrum restarts. It just takes the tempo out of the game, and that's where Ireland have been struggling.
Maybe, I mean, because the team that I've seen surpass themselves is Japan, and they're the ones used to it, Stephen.
Yeah, you can't disagree with that there, and they're the ones that are keeping the ball alive. Although I'll go back, you know, the first game that Japan played against Russia, there was a lot of handling errors. They couldn't get into second or third gear either, and I think it is a massive struggle for everybody, but you got to try and adapt. You got to take more care with the ball. At times yesterday, watching the game, when the ball hit the ground, I think, you know, Johnny Sexton knocked it on, and somebody else tried to jump on top of it, and when they jumped on top of it, the ball like slipped out of their hands, and then somebody else tried to jump on it and it slipped out again, and it really must be like a bar of soap. And for me, sitting here at home, I have no idea what it's actually like to be out there and be playing with the ball. And you know, I think sometimes you just gotta alter your game, but I think we've seen over the last couple of weeks that's something that Ireland are really struggling with, is altering their game and having a plan B or a plan C in place to cope with not only the opposition, but you know, secondly, the conditions.
Yeah, I guess it's what's the kind of responsible, clear thinking perspective on the next couple of weeks here, because there's no point in kicking the lard out of them.
I'd be interested to see what Fez thinks, though, on, like, we're hearing constantly plan B, decision making, confidence, which are all mental issues. I'd be interested to what he thinks about why it should be so difficult for a bunch of grown men to make decisions.
There you go, Fez.
Yeah, Wes, well, I think confidence comes from a good performance. Confidence comes from really good training sessions where you go into a game and you get off to a great start and you maintain that. And Ireland, as Michael alluded to, I don't think have fielded their strongest team in any of the games. I don't think some of the combinations have worked. And I think everybody is slightly doubting themselves. I don't think there's too many people in that 31-man squad would be guaranteed of a quarterfinal place in the first 15. I think everybody's still going, oh geez, you know, I'm not 100%. Where I think you got to have a lot more solidity. I think you got to have a lot more consistency, and that's everything that Ireland don't have at the minute. And when you're running out there and the ball is like a bar of soap, you know, that can be mental torture. You concentrate so hard in catching the ball. And when you take it into contact, the first thing as a defender is looking for is to try and target that ball. And small errors, small mistakes will just, you know, suck the confidence out of you. And I think some of the players, that will affect more than others. Other people can just deal with it, move on, and come out the following week and have a fantastic game. But I believe there's too many people in there that, you know, are just feeling the pressure. And the more inconsistent that we play, it seems to be getting on top of it. We look like we're anxious. We look like we're nervous sometimes.
Does that disappoint you as a player, Steve, that people can't kind of step back and alter game plans in game, or, you know, take things by the scruff of the neck, to use a cliche, but just kind of have a bit of a clearer decision-making process in-game for such experienced players.
No, definitely. Like, it's not rocket science, guys. If you're playing against Russia, and generally your pack is going to come out 99 times out of 100 ahead, they're stronger, they're more physical, the ball is ridiculously slippy, why would you not just scrum and maul them off the pitch? Like, just every opportunity that you get, just maul and maul and maul and suck the life out of them. But yet we still try to do fancy back plays, we still try to throw the ball wide, and that's all well and good if the ball is not the way it is. And I just think at the minute, on the pitch, just the decisions to be made are not the right ones. And, you know, senior players need to grab it by the scruff of the neck. But at the same time, guys, it's not just the players' fault. It's the coaches here that we have to talk about also. Why, you know, the coaches don't seem to be getting as much flack as the players for the inconsistent performances. You know, the players are going to try and go out there and implement a game plan that's been set down in front of them for 5 days previous or 6 days previous, or in the Russia case, 4 days previous, and try and implement it. So, you know, Joe, Andy Farrell, you know, Greg Feek, all the coaches, they need to come together and, you know, make sure that they take in the conditions, they take in the lads' mindset and where they actually are physically, and put a game plan to suit that.
I wonder what the effect of the two tries against Japan had on the team. Because you remember Joe was pointing out they were both in penalty advantages. So it was two cross kicks, or was it a chip and a cross kick?
I think seven of their 10 tries in the tournament have been directly from kicking.
Okay, but imagine now if them kicks hadn't come off, Ireland would probably have just kicked to the corner and got their, let's be optimistic, two opening tries from line-out mauls. And all of a sudden, I've said this is the way to do this, but because
well, we got one against Scotland, didn't
yeah,
we? Best
but strike. Because they got the scores from Japan off this more adventurous type play, they may have something might have flicked in their mind about this is how to go about this. I wonder what the knock-on effects of that were.
Okay, all right. Just to have a step back here, because like obviously, Joe, if you have a minutely prescribed game plan, like Stephen has referred to there, that the coaches in their wisdom get together and they say this is how we're going to win this game, this is how we're going to approach it, almost minute by minute. Then it's very difficult to expect those fellas to go off script. And this is a question that's been knocking around Ireland even when we're successful. Are they too prescribed? Is it too minutely detailed? Can they think on the fly? All of this carry on. I suppose the bottom line, Michael, is we don't know. You're closer to the camp than we are. Do you have those discussions with them even off the record?
Well, I mean, you certainly pick up little snippets of information from talking to people either on travel days or training and everything like that. But yeah, I mean, everybody is on message. Everybody feels the frustration that's there because they know that they're not performing as well as they can or to the best of their ability. You know, there's an awful lot more in the tank, for want of a better phrase.
But what are people scared of? What are people scared of? They're good pros. They're intelligent young men. They're super fit. They're well paid. Why can't, you know, what are they scared of? Because it does look like anxiety, whatever. It's not obviously a lack of physical bravery.
Well, there's an anxiousness there. And I mean, we saw that. You know, they almost retreated back into their shell in the Russia game. When they scored the three tries, you kind of thought, you know, geez, they're going to cut loose here at the start of the second half. Maybe it's a mental thing. Maybe they just dropped down a little bit mentally. And we saw how Russia dominated for long periods at the start of the second half of the game, but there was almost a huge sense of relief when the bonus point try came, and they played reasonably well again towards the tail end of the match and cut loose, and with the Gary Ringrose try. So I mean, I think they're playing well within themselves. Why they're not playing at the top of their game, I mean, you know, unless you want me to start writing a book and I'll have it out for Christmas. I'm not sure that I have the solution to that, to be perfectly fair about it.
None of us do. But I mean, the racehorse analogy, like obviously you'd give a quiet run, but that doesn't work in rugby. You know, you say, don't worry about the maiden down in Navan in June. It's the listed race in the Curragh in August we're going for. But like, it doesn't work like that in rugby.
I think we've got to be realistic also and look, you know, with the greatest respect to the players that played in the game last night. And the players who started that match against Russia, you know, the question I'd pose is how many of those players would be in our first choice team? So, for example, if we're playing a must-win game next weekend or the weekend after, how many of the players who started last night will be in the starting Irish team for a potential quarter-final against either South Africa or New Zealand?
Well, like, injuries notwithstanding, it's an absolutely good question.
Injuries notwithstanding, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, will the tight five...
Michael, you were there in 2011 when we beat Russia by a considerable more amount of points than we did yesterday.
63-13 or something, wasn't it?
63-13, and there was a lot of players during that game that wouldn't have played in a crucial game the following week, so... You know, we were able to get it done in 2011, and that's the point I was maybe going to ask you, Michael, is we played brilliant rugby in the group stages in 2011, some fantastic rugby. The whole of Ireland were getting behind us, and then we let ourselves down in a quarter final. So there is this chance that, you know, you don't win the World Cup in the group stages. Like,
what is the catalyst, guys? We're looking for a catalyst. You know, what can it be? 70 points against Samoa? Is that going to do it?
But how do you judge success? You know, I mean, if we're to say, you know, everybody was moaning and cribbing about, you know, Japan and it didn't happen and how poor we were against Japan. I mean, Japan were brilliant on the night. Their intensity level was fantastic, to be fair about it.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking for a reaction. And Joe Schmidt was trying to give people a chance in terms of those who hadn't played in a game. Give them a chance against Russia. They got that chance. They scored, we scored 5 tries during the course of the match. It wasn't a perfect performance. They have 5 more points than they had before the start of the game. Let's draw a line in the sand and move on. I mean, there's not, you know, there are matches ongoing over the course of the next couple of days here. There's no World Cup being given out now. Like, you know, it's not as if they're handing out the trophy now. God, if they handed out the trophy when we beat the All Blacks 6 months ago, wouldn't we? We'd have been delighted to take it then. I mean, there's still a long way to go in this competition. Ireland have a long way to go to be at the peak of where they can be. But my attitude, I have to say, is I think the curve is actually moving in the right direction. I still come back to the basic point that I make all the time. We haven't seen our best Irish team yet in this competition, and we're yet to do so.
Wes?
Yeah.
Judgment, reserve judgment is a fair thing. Reserve judgment, it doesn't really matter. Let's make our judgment on the 2nd of November, 3rd of November.
Yeah, or many weeks before that, more likely.
Oh, that's very negative.
No, like, I mean, I don't know the answer. Stephen might give us a better answer, but is it possible to turn it all around in one game now? It's possible to do it for one game.
Yes.
Is it possible to consistently change the whole dynamic around
the team?
And
you want to
win
it now, or the rest of us just want to win a quarter final, you know?
I know, but I mean, that wasn't where we were, the standards we were judging these lads by. Let's be honest about it now. Let's not go back and say, listen, we lost to Japan. It's grand if we come second in the pool.
Yeah, Conor Murray before the England match was asked, is he here to win a World Cup? And he said yes.
I'd say Joe loved
it. We've all put that to bed, like, at this point. No one's talking about that. But is the die cast, Steve, or can you really turn it around beyond a kind of one-off underdog role, passionate performance?
You can absolutely turn it around for one game, but can you do it for 3 games on the bounce to win a Rugby World Cup? The answer is no. I think Michael Corcoran is on the ground. He's in Japan. He is a lot more positive, I think, than we currently are, guys, because we're here in Ireland.
It's the weather.
There's a lot more negativity around here. But he's seeing these guys in training. He's interviewing them on a day-to-day basis, and he probably has a lot more insight on how the guys are feeling and what the camp is like. So for him to say, you know, I think they're on the upward curve. I think, you know, their performances have been mediocre, but they are going to get better. They are going to feel their best team. That, you know, that does give me a bit more confidence. But
that is a fair point about the number of changes from Japan to yesterday as well, even in terms of cohesion, yeah. I presume.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, it's a short turnaround to actually have a couple of days training. Yeah, I've got to remember too, guys, the amount of travel involved also. Then you have your recovery. Then you have your, you know, your massages, your physio, your video analysis. You have to sit down one-on-ones with the coaches. And sometimes, I've said it before, guys, in 2015, I can remember talking to a few lads who got home from the 2015 World Cup and they were actually glad to get home. They were just, the rugby overload was just, they were just, you know, bogged down by rugby overload. And I think, you know, that they got to use this next 10 days wisely, a bit like Michael is, getting out and seeing it, doing a few touristy things, and just getting their heads away from the rugby. Because I've been there, lads. I've been in the situation. I've been there when things aren't going well, and I've been there when things are flying it. And sometimes the best thing to do is forget about rugby for a few days and think about yourself and think about what's best for you, instead of you know, what's best for you, I mean, in terms of getting yourself to that point where you're going to play to your maximum potential. And if that's 2 days to go on a train ride across you know, a few different cities in Japan just to clear your head, then that's what it should be. And I think Joe and the rest of the coaching staff got to understand this, because they can't make the same mistake they made in 2015, where lads just couldn't wait to get home.
Get on the plane, Fez.
My boots are packed, Dara.
Goodwill ambassador, he should go.
Goodwill ambassador, yeah. No, but at least it's a recipe, because I suppose that's what's... I don't mind being negative, but I hate...
No, look, we are being over... Well, I'm being overly negative anyway, but... And it's only out of frustration,
yeah,
because we're so desperate for him to do well, yeah. But...
I mean, these guys set standards for themselves, and last year we did give them all the praise that was coming their way deservedly, and now it's only fair to hold them to the same standards, because they're holding themselves to the same standard. They weren't making any apologies about being the plucky underdogs at the end of 2018, and even going back to when O'Driscoll and O'Connell were captaining, we had moved on past the once off, so we were treating ourselves, we were referring to ourselves as equals. So once you don't maintain or keep up to the standards that you've set for yourself, then there's going to be obviously fair critique.
I think the overload point is interesting too. You know, like, I remember even talking to a couple of people in the Limerick hurling camp after they lost the semi-final this year, and the vibe I got off them was relief that they were off a treadmill after a year and a half on it. So
sick to death of it.
I think Fez is probably right. If you listen to what the guys are saying and look at the body language, maybe 3-4 days, get away and come back and start afresh is exactly what they need. You know?
How do beautifully conditioned young athletes at the age of 22 wind down these days?
I don't know, maybe Cork, you'd know that one.
Don't know. What is the blow-off steam method preferred by people who were born in the 1990s?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can think of many ways of blowing off steam, to be perfectly fair. But as a 22-year-old, I mean, those days are long past me, to be fair about it. But, I mean, look, the situation is that there's no training for anybody over the weekend. Everybody switched off. People will do various different things, as they did last week as well. You know, so you're taking in the whole cultural side of it also. And there's certainly a ton of that to do around Japan. And it's an absolutely outstanding country. The people have completely embraced the Rugby World Cup. And I mean, when you're at a train station waiting for your next bullet train to go somewhere else, you know, you're running into supporters from Australia, from South Africa and everything like that, and they're enjoying and embracing the experience also. And
nearly blown to extinction 75 years ago. I mean, yeah, maybe they should go down to Hiroshima and get everything in perspective, or maybe we should in the media as well. You know,
that's exactly it.
Okay, what about just a bit of crack to end up, because we are reaching for the revolver here slightly. Scotland, Japan. Call that one. Just everyone give us a minute on that. Scotland, Japan. I know it's 10 days away or whatever it is, Sunday week. Fez, how do you see it going?
Yeah, we had this chat in studio there, Dara, last weekend about the points, and, you know, Japan, if they won 3 games, you know, might not be able to qualify. And you said, oh, no, they will be able to qualify. Well, they actually can't, because if Scotland get a bonus point try win against them and Japan get nothing out of the game, then, you know, it's all to play for. So I actually fancy Scotland to do a job on Japan. I don't know where I'm really getting that from after watching Scotland over the last couple of weeks, but something tells me that, you know, the intensity that Japan played at will take their toll on them. And Scotland, if you play a bit of a loose game, it will play into their hands. So for me, I'm going to go with Scotland.
Okay, what about you, Corky?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp, actually. You're in a situation where there was a lot of pressure on Japan in the opening game against Russia. That was a match, that was a forgettable game, to be perfectly fair about it. But Japan had been waiting for Ireland in the long grass for a long period of time, have been together for 12 weeks, literally just training, not playing any matches, training in the heat, training in the conditions, and did a job in Ireland. can they bring the same intensity under massive pressure and expectation level from the local people? I mean, Scotland, you would say, are kind of slightly outsiders at the moment to make the knockout stages of the competition. But I actually think that they've got enough clever players. Finn Russell is really good. I saw them against Samoa during the week. When Finn Russell pulls the strings with Stuart Hogg at fullback, they're a very, very dangerous side. I actually think Scotland will beat Japan.
Okay, Wes?
Yeah, I probably fancied Scotland initially. I thought Japan would be a one-off. I've probably gone the other way the last while, but it's a great game to watch, to be honest. It's a nice, you know,
we're sitting back
as a neutral
it.
It's a very good climax to that.
It's not neutral though for us. We're not neutral. We'll be watching it after hopefully a 5-point return on the Saturday.
Yeah. Well, look, it's out of our hands to an extent. Yeah. We'll do our bit,
but
we
want Scotland to win from the purely rugby point of view, because that puts us in the South Africa quarterfinal.
It's hard to cheer against Japan.
Very hard.
There's just one thing worth noting there. So Scotland will have a 4-day turnaround to that match, while Japan will have an 8-day. So whether the intensity comes into it from a Japan, they will be fresh. I mean, just the famous 6-day, 4-day, 8-day turnaround, if that means anything, it means that Japan will go in front of a home crowd, qualification in their own hands, 8 days off.
It's absolutely massive. It's absolutely massive, the turnaround. You look at Fiji getting beaten by Uruguay, and then Fiji against Georgia, I think handicap was like 8 points, and then they run riot because they have a lot longer turnaround. So I totally agree with you. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves slightly, and Japan's really, they're the host nation, and they've maybe done the maths before the tournament started, and you know the games are certainly suiting them. So I might swing back towards Japan.
We'll edit that out, Stephen, and whatever.
I'll go for a draw. So, but they have played the best rugby in Pool A, in fairness. And Wes has just handed me his phone. There, Brody Retallick in the team for Namibia. Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's a big.
A big reason to cheer for Scotland.
That's a big bit of news in the context of who might win this tournament, in fairness. I know it was Canada the other day, and like even the All Blacks, in fairness, as much as they scored 9 tries and 63 points.
But they butchered another 9.
They looked tired towards the end as well. The conditions obviously are difficult for everyone, but it was just when you started going, like, Sonny Bill Williams looks like he's found a bit of form. Mm-hmm. Hansen's obviously a big fan. Rico Ioane came in there really hungry. Ben Smith hasn't really featured yet. Muanga and Barrett at 10 and 15 have a couple more games. Mm. Now this lunatic is back in the team. Mm. Like, they're all to be added to the team to beat South Africa. Mm. Like, if it clicks for them, it's starting to look ominous for everyone else to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Nobody can disagree with that. And if you do want to disagree, you've got 5 seconds of silence to jump in and say Wes is wrong. 1, 2, 3. No, everyone's with you, Wes. Yeah,
Roll on to quarterfinals.
All right. We leave it there. Brilliant, lads. Corky, enjoy your few days off. Fez, I'll see you in studio in a week or so. Yeah, thanks a million. And thanks to Michael Glennon and Wes here in studio, and Gary Moore, who produced these.